It's the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hey, this is Zeus, a.k.a. Z from the Realms of Trinity.
Hey, this is Brian, a.k.a. Sir Brian from the Realms of Trinity and Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
Hey, Justin here, DM from the Realms of Trinity and a member of the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
Hey, this is Matt Reeder, a.k.a. M. Reeder, creator of the Wizard's Apprentice series.
And you're listening to the 159th episode of Neverwinter Nights Podcast, a podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights series of role-playing games. Well, here we are back. From a little extended absence, we had our time rounding up some individuals for interview. We sent a bunch of emails out and stuff, but no responses. But we do have a great interview coming up today with the creator of the Wizard Apprentice series for Neverwinter Nights 2. It's a series of modules, Matthew Ryder. Great series, so stay tuned for that interview. I got a piece of information that, you know, this is something that I thought was a big problem when it happened, but now it seems to be remediated. But late in 2009, early 2010, Neverwinter Nights and Neverwinter Nights 2 was not being sold in regular retail stores anymore. I went to a lot of Best Buys, a lot of, you know, this Walmarts and different places, Targets, and couldn't find the game anymore. It was totally, like, shelved, so to speak. And it went to more of an all-online format, like with Steam and other sources, Grand Old Games and stuff. And I thought that was probably a bad idea because you're never going to get people that are going to see the game that don't know anything about Steam or Grand Old Games or, you know, that kind of thing, or actually just like to have the physical media. There's always good curb appeal whenever you have stuff on the shelf. Well, good news that Neverwinter Nights Complete package is still in stores now, and it retails for MSRP for $29.95. I found it in Target, Walmart, and at Best Buy. So it is being fully remarketed in new packaging, and it's really cool. It has all Neverwinter Nights 1, all the premium module series, including the Kingmaker. And there's also Neverwinter Nights 2 that has everything, Master Betrayer, Storm is Aehir, and it even has Mysteries of Westgate with it. You know, it's a great deal. It's also great that people can see the game back in the stores again after it had extended absences such as it has. So definitely good for the community, but we've already seen a bunch of new players on our Persistent World, and other Persistent Worlds have seen very similar responses with the player population. Seem to be rebolstered some from this sell. So it's definitely good news for the Neverwinter Nights community all the way around.
And news for the Neverwinter Nights 1 universe, there's a new beta server online, Rune and the World of Midland. They're seeking players. Rune is a small server in its testing stages, but it has a lot to offer for those of the social and role-playing communities, and is based on a whole new world continent called Midland. It's a vast territory, much like FR.
And in Neverwinter Nights 2, we have two new items to talk about today. The first one is the Wizard's Apprentice Chapter 2, The Talisman in the Eye. We'll actually get into that one in the interview today, so I'm going to kind of skip over that one, and you guys can listen on and hear about that as we talk with the creator, Matthew. The other new thing is Neverwinter Nights 2 Inventory Sorter. This is an engine that attempts to allow players more control over the sort ordering. It gives you features to control how you sort inventory in your containers like your magic bags. There's an in-game interface, and it lets you use different criteria and save that criteria per character, so every character can have their own personal settings. The criteria, if you can't find the criteria that you need, and if you can script a little bit, it's also possible to add additional criteria and customize it yourself even. So sounds like a pretty nice feature there.
Yeah, it is. That's something definitely worth looking into all the way around if you're a persistent world runner. You know, it's definitely something that I think if you took a look at and customized a little bit for your specific needs, definitely worth looking at. I mean, it's definitely something different.
Yeah, and one thing to add there, I almost forgot to mention, Ratanak did that update, so
yep,
it's on the vault.
Yeah, definitely check that out. You know, it's always great to be able to sort your magic bags too. I mean, you never know what you're going to have in those bags. So you.
Well, and I've many times found myself taking everything back out and putting them back in the order I want them. So, hey, this thing sounds great.
Yeah, it does. Yep. you don't want to be left holding the bag. Yours or otherwise. So definitely check them out. There's several other interesting posts out on the IGN vault, just miscellaneous, like new weapon models, different odds and ends stuff that, you know, that was posted since the last episode. So definitely go out to the vault, check out those posts, and, you know, definitely do that. And also, if you'd, like I said before about the Neverwinter Nights Complete, if you want an extra copy of the game, or you got friends who played role-playing fantasy stuff and, you know, you think that they would be interested in getting a Neverwinter Nights 2 or 1 for that matter, this is certainly something for them to pick up, or even for a gift. It's certainly worth, you know, it's just a lot of value, and it's also going to help the community out. So if you want to help the community, definitely try to push this as much as possible, because, you know, Obsidian and BioWare and Atari aren't going to do too much in that area, because they're throwing it out there, which is great, but you're not going to see the world, you know, World of Warcraft banners everywhere with saying Neverwinter Nights 2 now available. You know, you're just not going to see the level of marketing that you're going to see with other stuff. So we got to do the marketing on that if we want to continue to see the population grow and replenish people who've, you know, stepped away from Neverwinter Nights in general over the years, because eventually it happens. People step away for other games, and or they get tied up with other stuff that, or they're just, you know, in and out. You know, they just wanted to play it, and they had enough of it, and that was it. But so you got to always look at the aspect of trying to replenish the game population. That helps everybody, module creators and persistent worlds for both series. It's definitely important. Well, hey, thanks, Matt, for coming on the old Neverwinter Nights podcast. You know, it's really great to have you on. I've been sniffing around since I was to see your latest post of your part two of your Wizard's Apprentice series, and I thought it'd be great to have you on, and I'm glad you were able to make it.
Yeah, it's really great being here. I really appreciate it.
No problem. And can we get you started off telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in NWN2 module development and your background, like D&D or whatever?
Well, a little bit about myself. I got started in D&D on, I don't know if you guys remember the, you know that old board game called Dungeon? It was like a D&D spinoff. You ever play that?
Long time ago. I seen it. I never actually got to play it, though.
Yeah, so my parents had that. My dad used to play pen and paper way back in the day when he was in the Army. So, you know, we would play that Dungeon, and then on our old TI-99, we had an old game called Tunnels of Doom. I don't know if you guys played that, the big throwback. And then of nope. course, Pool of Radiance and everything that everybody's played. And, you know, so I progressed Baldur's Gate. And then when I was over in Iraq, I got my parents to send me Neverwinter Nights, the original, and, you know, kind of played that when we weren't doing war stuff. And when I got back, I picked up Neverwinter Nights 2 and liked it. You know, and after a while, I got into playing some of the custom community mods and thought they were pretty cool. It's all the tool set, and just figured I'd try my hand at it. It just kind of happened.
Well, I got to say, first of all, thanks for your service. You know, absolutely, totally thankful for that. And also the fact that it's funny, you go from combat to developing Neverwinter Nights 2 modules. Different kind of combat.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's cool, too, because you go from a real-life combat to a combat of fighting with a tool set every day.
Well, yeah. Yeah, actually, I would say it's actually pretty similar. The tool set's a worthy opponent.
Absolutely. Well, that's cool. Yeah, you definitely got a long history and everything like that, and definitely, you know, the work that you've done is good, is excellent. I've been looking over it, and, you know, how well you've really learned the tool set, and actually how well you create content, too, is extremely good. And, you know, I just looking at your feedback and everything, it is great.
Yeah, it's, I was really, really shocked by the feedback. Wizard's Apprentice 1 was really just, I was just kind of messing around. I had started with a couple of ideas, and this one was kind of the one that took. And I started out and said, hey, I'll just take a month and a little practice module. And now before I knew what it was to build a module. And so, you know, a month became a month and 6 months. But, you know, we finally finished it. What's that? Yeah. No,
or 4 years like us.
Yeah. So, and when I released it, I really had no idea what to expect. I kind of was just like, you know, by everything, when everything was said and done, I'd worked on it for about 6 months and play tested it until I could barely stand the sound of the opening music to Neverwinter Nights 2. And so I wasn't sure what to expect. And, you know, apparently people really liked it. And I was, and I'm really pleased with that, really happy about it. And I'm glad everybody likes it. You know, it's important to have some fun, right?
For you to have that kind of response, it's a tough crowd out there, man. To even have people respond to stuff anymore on the IGN vault is it's like the old Wild West movies. You get the tumbleweed blowing down the aisle. You could put out the best stuff and, you know, like the most innovative, awesome stuff, and you're just gonna hear tumbleweed most of the time, just, you know, going down this OK Corral street there, you know. But I'll say this, I mean, for you to have that kind of a feedback, so I mean, serious, it to me, that's like huge victory. So,
you know, there's always the Ugg Boots guys. They'll always throw their two cents in. They're always,
oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's always the, quote, expert armchair module quarterbacks, you know, that always have to put their, you know, two, like you said, your two cents in and whatnot. So it's just, it's part of doing anything on the internet or in a public, you know, facing setting like that. It's always that way.
But as a whole, I have to, you know, the community is great as a whole. We have I think we have a pretty special thing here with Neverwinter Nights and the Neverwinter Nights 2 community. I think it's pretty great.
Yeah, absolutely.
So can you tell us a little bit about the background story of the Wizard Apprentice series?
After I got done with the original campaign and then of Neverwinter Nights 2 and then Mask of the Betrayer and Storm of Zaheer, I went through and played some of the community modules and I thought it would be nice to make sort of a non-epic story. Something that was kind of basic, just, you know, kind of just a regular guy doing regular stuff. So, you know, I came up with the idea of, you know, just your regular, just a guy who's apprenticed to a wizard. And his master gets some good news one night and they go out and party a little bit too much at the local tavern, come back. And next thing you know, the magical tiny cows have escaped from their paddock, as they are wont to do. And the story just goes from there. So it's a lot of, you know, for Wizards Apprentice 1, you know, it's level 1 to 4. So it's a lot of basic, you know, low-level, non-epic, non-world-changing stuff. And I think that kind of let me have a little bit more fun with it, kind of be a little bit more whimsical with it. It's, you know, not be quite so serious. But the backstory is you're just, you know, you're a wizard's apprentice. You're out. With your master at the local tavern, you come back. Some of the cows have escaped, and then things go from there, and that's how the story starts. You know.
Now that's got to be the best story start ever.
Yeah, right.
In Dungeons and Dragons ever. I mean, R.E. Salvatore couldn't even come close to a start of that epic biblical proportion of taking care of a released bovine. it's just great.
they're tiny, so that's, you know, that's important. You got to keep those tiny cows because those things they're little, but they're badass.
Yes.
did you plan that story out, or did you just kind of go along with it? You know, just make it up as you go along.
Oh, are you talking about, like, as I was? Yeah, a lot of what I do is seat of the pants. You know, I'll. Especially the first one. I mean, the first one, I was just kind of out there and I was like, well, what would happen next? And it didn't really matter how far-fetched it was. I just kind of went with it. The, you know, first or second remotely reasonable thing that popped in my head, and I just kind of ran with it, you know?
Hey, sometimes the best stuff comes up that way, you know?
I hope so. That's how I do it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, and I make no jokes about that. That's a great start. I actually wish we had done something like that.
What are you talking about? That's how I do things.
I know that. I'm talking about the released cattle. That's great.
Yeah. There's a lot of silly stuff in that first one. I like it. I like to have a little bit of fun. I think I got a couple of comments when I released the second one. One person said they were glad it was more serious. They couldn't finish the first one because it was too silly. But you know,
yeah, but that's the 2 cent comment right there. You know, I mean, that's the I understand. You got to have at least my personal opinion is you got to have a little bit of that humor in there too. Our stuff's really serious, but at the same time, we have some really ridiculously funny things similar to what you've done. And, you know, it does make a big difference if people actually, you know, see that or they come across that, whether it's a persistent one or it's a module. You know, story-based is story-based at the end of the day. And you know, that's the kind of stuff that really adds that grit. Because even the Neverwinter Nights 2 campaign, one campaign for that matter, and even Baldur's Gate, they've all had elements of humor thrown in them.
You gotta have that comic relief. Otherwise, it's just going to get you'll be playing along, and eventually, you know, if everything is just so serious, it's just going to start getting depressing. You have to have that comedy in there to relieve you of all the stress. You know, even a little laugh every now and then, that's definitely good for the player, and definitely, most definitely good for the developer.
Yes. Yeah, you got to have fun, you know, working on the stuff that you're working on. I'm not saying you wouldn't if you didn't put comedic elements in there. It's just the fact that when you do that, you're opening up your mind to even like other things that you may not even have thought of to do, and it's just really cool.
Yeah, it's like the greatest setup too, because you know you're exploring this dungeon, and you know stuff's trying to kill you, and there's all this crazy stuff, and then all of a sudden you run into a kobold that's, you know, scratching himself or something. And, you know, you get some potty humor. It's a great setup. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, I love it. You know, I noticed that you have a lot of cool features in the module. Like, I was looking through the list. You have, like, sledding, base jumping, swimming. it's awesome. Can you tell us more about those features and the slew of other ones that your module has that I didn't cover there?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you know, like you said, the vault's a bit... you know, the vault's a little bit deserted sometimes, so you got to sell yourself. So, you know, when I was making that stuff's all for the Wizard's Apprentice 2. When I was making Wizard's Apprentice 2, I wanted to kind of do stuff that I hadn't seen done before. And admittedly, I have not come close to playing all of the entries. There's like, you know, there's over 500 modules for Neverwinter Nights 2 alone. But, you know, stuff that I'd never really seen done, or stuff that seemed like it, you know, definitely hadn't been done in any of the original campaigns or the official stuff. So, so a lot of it, the base jumping, I actually had someone, another modder, comment on that. They had missed that. It's I guess, in the truest sense of the word, it's not really base jumping, because that's when you voluntarily jump off of something. And I called it base jumping just not to spoil the surprise. I mean, you get to plummet from a high elevation, but I guess it's not technically base jumping. But with that, what I wanted to do was avoid, you know, the standard solution to, you know, jumping or falling off of stuff in Neverwinter Nights 2, since there's really no 3D graphics engine apart from animations, is just to make the screen go blank and then, you know, reappear it somewhere else and have some text pop up and say, "You fell off a cliff. God, that was scary." So I wanted to make it where, if you're going off a cliff or you're falling off of something, going over a waterfall, you're really doing it and you get to see it. So that's what that is. I tried to bring the third dimension into the game a little bit more. It was challenging, but I think it works. It's not perfect, but I think for what we're working with Neverwinter Nights 2 toolset, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of stuff that you do, I mean, yeah, you have to, you are confined by the limitations of the tools, you know, the engine itself and things that you do that. But to even come up with stuff like creative solutions to that, I mean, that's a big part of it right there. Just what you did was a great idea and a great way to convey that exact, you know, with the base jumping. I mean, yeah, I know what you're saying, but at the same time, I mean, for you to be able to do that, it's still really cool.
It's really fun. The sledding was another thing. I think technically there's probably a way to make it controlled, but I didn't. I just kind of scripted it, and you just, you know, it's, you know, basically you're sliding downhill, but, you know, it looks cool, and when I finally got it working, I was pretty happy. There was the one other thing that I really tried to do, this is the other feature of all the features I'd like to highlight. Since this is a wizard-specific, I say wizard, arcane spellcaster. You can do sorcerer, and I guess technically you could do a bard, but it could get painful. I tried to make it where you could really interact with your environment through magic, because in the CRPGs, magic and everything is usually really, really focused towards combat mostly. You got your spells that, you know, defend you, that buff you. You know, there's the crafting, and that's fun, but it's mostly combat-based, and I tried to expand that into different areas, so you have puzzle solutions with magic, and interaction with the environment with magic. I figured out a way to make make it where you can cast spells at trees and make them fall over. And, you know, it's not a deal where the screen goes black and it falls over. You can actually, the tree actually is animated falling over. And you can make rock slides. There's several places where you have what is basically overwhelming odds against you that you probably couldn't fight through unless you were really, really on top of your game. But you've got the environment there, and you can use environmental objects to your advantage to, you know, help get through stuff. And that's pretty cool. I had a lot of fun doing that. I had a lot of bugs doing that.
You spent a lot of time with the VFX editor, huh?
You know, I did. I came up with, it was based on, I think Sean from Risen Hero came up with the boulder toss animation using the object visual special effect. And I kind of adapted that to another type of visual effect that you can actually put on an invisible creature. And so when the creature falls down, the visual effect falls down with it. So you don't actually have to animate a tree. You got a visual effect there, and it uses the other creature's animation. It's actually surprisingly simple once you get it going.
Oh, absolutely. We've used a similar thing for our flying ship battle scenes. You know, we're retaking. You could use the same thing with placeables. So
yeah.
you could do dynamic portals. You can have the placeable that has the portal visual effect on it, like one of the collision boxes. And it's really cool. It's funny how you come up with the same thing. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty cool. I think it adds a lot to the game. I've spent the last almost 2 years working with, and I still get a kick out of dropping rocks on giants' heads and stuff like that. It's still fun. And then I've got a lot of the usual stuff. I've got some, I got a companion influence system that's pretty similar to the OC. It's pretty basic. You can romance your companions. Let's see, what else here? Anything really interesting? One thing that I did that I haven't seen a lot, I'm sure. I've heard tell that this has been done. Never played a game with it, but I tried to make a couple of larger battles that kind of, try to mimic something like you'd see on, the Lord of the Rings or something like that. Try to get some really big battles in there. And with the AI processing requirements on your processor, that can get pretty dicey. But I got 40 or 50 combatants on the screen at one time, and it works pretty well, especially if you turn down the graphics right before the battle. It can go really smooth. But I thought that was pretty cool, having those big battles in there. That was fun to make.
Oh, definitely. There's a lot of different ways to where you can actually scale back the, not just even the, like you said about that, but there's ways you could even trim down the your models. You could turn off the cast shadows and all that stuff on the actual model, on the blueprint itself, and that'll, every creature then doesn't cast shadows and it doesn't receive shadows. So there's a lot of graphic stuff you can trim right off of the battle to even squeeze even a few more creatures in there if you wanted to.
I'm definitely going back to the tool set after this, and I'm going to claim I came up with that.
Well, hey, that's what we're here for. We've been there, done that. We have a lot of epic sized battles in our system world, and that's how I was able to do it. That and the fact that I rolled back the AI that was added in Storm of Zaheer.
Yeah.
I went back to the AI that they had in Mask of the Betrayer, and it was like order of magnitude better.
Are you serious?
Oh yeah, on the processor and everything. I mean, because I watch all that stuff because we have pretty large, actually very sure. large system world, and you want to make sure everything's nice and smooth. So the first thing I noticed whenever we added Storm of Zaheer content to the our module, like this is back in 2008. It was like unbelievable. It almost brought it to its knees. You'd go out and fight like one group of thing, and the whole server would actually lag to nothing.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. And then so what I did was I said, well, it's got to be the AI, because I start changing out. I used to start disabling AI. I'd go override the script with like nothing basically just to see.
Sure.
And that was it. And so what I had to do was extremely painful, because I had to reinstall the module. Yeah, I had to reinstall install Mask of Betrayer, but don't install Storm of Zaheer to keep the base scripts from updating with the new versions from Storm of Zaheer. And you had to pull out all the NWC2s, blah, blah, blah. I'm not getting into all, but that's what we had to do, and it made a big difference. You might want to do something similar to that.
I am going to do that. I think I'll bet if I just put a new version of the different AIs in my my hack folder. Shouldn't that override it?
That should. We stuck it in our module folder, but I'm sure it would be the same as, you know, you doing it in a hack or an override folder. You know, override wouldn't be
campaign folder or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But certainly that's something you might want to look at.
I definitely, when I was planning this battle like a year ago, I talked to people and there were echoes and rumors of people that had made stuff like this happen, but I could never find those people. And apparently you were them. So, good. Glad I got that. I'm gonna see what I can do with that.
So I was looking at the IGN fault earlier, and I was checking your first module and seeing that it had almost 50 volts and it has a 0.4 rating. Won any awards for any of your work?
The guys from the podcast asked me to be on their show.
Well, that is one award for sure.
I thought it was pretty cool. Officially, no. I haven't gotten anything. I think I was in the running for one of the AME awards. I haven't heard anything about it. I was up against Serene by Songo, and that was an amazing module, which is a lot bigger than mine. So I wouldn't be surprised if Songo got that, and I think rightly so. Based on the numbers, I should be hitting Hall of Fame here pretty soon. I've got the downloads and the votes and everything. So I'm just kind of waiting for movement on that. I don't want to bug Maximus too much on that. I've already bugged him enough on getting Wizards Apprentice 2 up on the vault. But hoping to see Hall of Fame here in the near future.
Well, that'd be cool. At least something, right?
Yeah, I'm envious of the flag on my next to my name on the vault.
Well, absolutely, and I think they will get around to it because you've already met the requirements for it, so I don't see any reason why they won't do it. It's just, I think it's because they switched hands of the person who maintains the site, and it's like, I think it's a manual process. I don't think it's something that's automated.
I was actually talking to Maximus. He seemed to indicate that it was an automated process, but you know, I'm not really sure exactly how that works.
it must not be too automated. It must be semi-automated. You know, I don't know how what they mean by automated. It depends on what your definition of is. I guess if I must be one of that type of things, I guess. But anyhow. But yeah, so hopefully for that, and then hopefully the AME guys, you know, take a look at your work too. The Academy for Modding Excellence, because I know they review modules, and you know, that's actually one of their primary focuses is modules. And hopefully in their next award cycle that you get on the list, I certainly will be whispering in the ears of the folks who run it. So no question there.
I appreciate that. Yeah, that'd be real nice. That'd make me all warm and fuzzy on the inside.
That's good.
So working on a module as in-depth and detailed as yours, what sort of challenges did you face when creating it?
God, what challenges didn't I face? I mean, you know, the first one, you know, your first module, you're just trying to figure out which way is up and how to quit making barns keeping appearing on the screen. It's like, you know, my first area had like 60 barns before I figured out how to press escape.
There's no such thing as too many barns. Come on.
especially when dealing with tiny cattle, right?
Yes,
that's right.
Well, can you tell us maybe just some of the, I don't know, interesting challenges that you had?
It was scripting. You know, if you're gonna do stuff where. If you're going to do stuff like I did in Wizard's Apprentice, you got to get the scripting in there. And, you know, I'm a one-man show here, so I had to learn it myself. And I have never done any scripting. Back when I was like 10, my dad had me, you know, doing programs in BASIC on our old TI-99. But after that, you know, no programming or anything. So learning a script was challenging but fun, and trying to figure all that out was really challenging. The idiosyncrasies of the tool set. I almost lost Wizards Apprentice 1 about halfway through because of the wonderful autosave/autocrash your toolset feature that was shipped with the toolset. Every time I tried to erase grass, it would crash the whole thing.
I personally love the autosave crash.
Yeah, Jason here, he was doing a whole bunch of item creations for drops in the game, and he... got just to the end, and all of a sudden, boom. Had to do it all over again.
Yeah, and then it did it to me again on that guild hall. So.
Yeah, it sucks. Fortunately, I was able to dig through the entrails of my computer and dredge up one of the autosaves that actually didn't crash, and then from there I switched to the not the file format, but the folder format, and that's much more stable, and so that's better.
Oh yeah, I work exclusively in the folder format. The module format's asking for total rear-end annihilation. that's what you're waiting for.
Yeah, so there's that. I think just the scope of Wizard's Apprentice 2 was an enormous challenge. When I started it out, I was kind of aiming at maybe like a 10-hour adventure. I kind of had in mind where it was going, but you know, it was only my second mod, so I still didn't really have a good idea of how much time stuff takes. So I figured, you know, my first one took me about 6 months. I'm better now, so I should get the second one done in 8 months. Well, you know, 12, 13 months into it, I'm only like halfway through, so I'm starting to get really discouraged. And, you know, so just the size of and the enormity of the task was really challenging. So that was pretty tough. And then figuring out all the other stuff I wanted to add, like, you know, like I was talking about, like the sledding. There's a kind of a weird bug in between the time where you fall and you start sliding. And I'm a bit of a perfectionist, and I didn't like it because you fall and you slide. That's how it should be. There shouldn't be a gap, but there's a gap, so I got to fix the gap. So I spent weeks trying to fix the gap. I tried to come up with some stop-motion animation nonsense, and I got that working only to find out that, you know, how well the stop-motion animation worked was based on your processor. And if your processor was overworked, instead of sliding forward, you would slide backwards. Because I don't know, it has something to do with the way the engine plots the points. So if you've got an okay load, you slide, you fall, you slide, it's beautiful. But, you know, as soon as maybe you add some trees in the area or start doing some stuff, you know, you go backwards. And so I thought I had it fixed, and then you come back and dudes are sliding uphill and it's just nonsense. And so you got to figure out. So I eventually had to chuck the whole stop motion animation thing. And now if you play the game and you go to the part where you slide down the hill, just, you know, there's going to be a pause, and just enjoy the pause for what it is and then slide down that hill.
Yeah, we have those challenges as well. We'll come up with ideas, and there'd be a lot of times where I say, this would be a great idea if this works. And you do it, you spend all that time, you get it like 3/4 of the way, but you can never get it to the end. Just because of stuff like that.
Well, and it'll be funny because a lot of people may not even notice the pause, you know, but you notice it because you're trying to get it perfect.
Well, yeah, and now everybody who listens to the podcast will notice it too.
They'll notice, yeah, exactly.
Well, this is the behind-the-scenes look, you know, so this, this is where you get the special detailed information.
Right, that's why they're listening.
That's right.
They're like, oh my God, there's the pause, I saw it. I saw the pause.
Well, I know what you're talking about, though. Certainly, many a project we've done where we've gotten stuff really good, but then there would always be that one wrench to throw at it. Like right towards the end, where you get it to the point where you're like, yeah, this is work, this is good, and all of a sudden you're like, crap. It's like, that ain't working right.
Yeah,
I haven't been there 100 times myself at all.
No, absolutely not. You got the Benny Hill dance to go pretty good.
Yeah, that took a minute, though. I had to get all that crap synced up, and man, it just does not like time. The tool set does not like time.
No.
Oh God, there was one other one. You've probably seen it, the Robinson Workshop, the cathedral tile set.
Unfortunately, yes.
It's beautiful. It's like this beautiful, seductive woman who's just mean and harsh. So I build the one of the final areas, like, you know, in Wizard's Apprentice 2, you know, you start out and you're a prisoner in this tower, and you escape from the tower and you find out all the stuff. So you're on a quest to find these ancient ruins, of course, and not to be trite or anything, but you know, like, how many things can you do? And so you're finding these ancient ruins, and you finally get there, and great, beautiful cathedral tile set. And then if you happen to get close to the wall, all of a sudden nobody can see anybody, and nothing happens. And, you know, I've spent all this time building this great, and I'm like, what?
There's a reason for that. We ran into very similar. We used it too, and I had a whole area built. Actually, one of my area developers had a whole area built, and where we get to use it, put it in, looks beautiful.
Oh God!
Mobs just stand there, and they won't fight. I mean, they're just standing there, and it's not because they're not hostile. It's just they're not seeing. They're not. It's something wrong. So.
Line of sight stuff. I talked to Hellfire about it. He said line of sight stuff was all borked.
Yeah, it is, and yeah, one of our ZNK Studios got the comma. He actually was looking at it, and he figured out what the problem was, but it would take a major effort to fix the problem. But yeah, so I know what you're talking about. You get that far along, and you have stuff like that happen. Yep.
But all the listeners out there, don't worry, we got it sorted out. You still get your cathedral. I got a workaround that works, and it actually, I think, looks better than the original. So we got that sorted. But that was pretty challenging. So I thought it'd be pretty cool to throw a mini game in there. I don't know if there was Quest for Glory. You guys remember Quest for Glory? That old 2D.
I do actually. Yep.
Yeah. If you went to the Magic Mountain and got the wizard there, they had something called like the Mage's Maze or the Wizard's Maze or something like that. I don't know. It made a big impression on me. I thought it was awesome. So I kind of came up with a mini game it's called the Arcane Labyrinth. It's on the page. You can see a screenshot of it. And so I kind of had to program a whole alternative spell casting system, and I had to create AI for the opponent in that. And that was pretty challenging, trying to get all the animations line up with moving to locations and stuff, and discovering that one of the script functions for returning a location is messed up and you actually won't run to that location. So I had to fill the area with waypoints and tell it to move to waypoints and stuff. So it was an interesting exercise in scripting. Oddly enough, not a lot of bugs there. I expected a ton of bugs there, but nobody, no problems there.
Yeah, I know. I always like the undocumented features. You know,
when
you go to use a script and it just doesn't do it what it's supposed to do. I mean, there's been that's just one example. We've ran into the more complex stuff you try to do, the more you run into that. Really.
Yeah, I usually have the opposite happen. If it's simple, it screws up. But if it's 600 pages long, it works just fine.
Yeah, right. Well, you're anticipating. That's why. Yeah.
I'm gonna hire you to do all my hard stuff from here on out, then.
Z&B scripting.
That's right.
Who else is effing gonna do it?
So nobody.
That's our tagline. Our stuff.
So how many chapters do you plan on releasing for your module? Do you have any timelines set?
Timelines are funny little things. if you ever have just an inordinate amount of free time on your hands, you can go on to the BioWare forums and look at my update post that I have for Wizards Apprentice 2, and you'll see about probably 20 times where I push back the timeline with like really optimistic phrases like, oh, I'll definitely have it done by Christmas. Okay, New Year's, no doubt about it. Oh, we'll have it up by March.
So you go by Blizzard's timelines then.
Yeah. So no, I made a timeline for Wizards Apprentice 2, and I felt like it kind of took some of the enjoyment out of the process of making the module. And don't get me wrong, it was a blast. It was a lot of fun. Getting some of the stuff to work that ended up working and making it out there is a blast. But, you know, I ended up, you know, when I was doing Wizards Apprentice 2, I was on that thing like every night, you know. Well, I mean, not like that's unusual. I know a lot of modders do that. And if you run PW, I'm sure you got to do a ton of that stuff. But, you know, it can get wearing. And there was a point during the summer at a low point where, you know, I'd gotten a couple of bad comments on Wizards Apprentice 1, and, you know, it was just like, it seemed like I was going nowhere, that I was, you know, I was actually questioning whether I'd be able to finish it. So I'm going to try and stay away from a timeline. I would like to, I like to stay away from them and just kind of get it done when I'm done. I'm only planning on releasing one more for the Wizards Apprentice series. Originally I was thinking like four or five, but that's before I even finished my first one and knew what it took. So, you know, we're definitely going for this next one needs to be the last one. I think that any more would start to make the story drag out a little too long. I think one more module, I've kind of got a vague idea of, you know, where we're going with it, and I'm starting to develop what type of a module it needs to be, and I think it'll work really well.
Do you have any ideas for any other modules when you're done with the Wizard Apprentice series, or are you just going to call it on that?
No, I have one other idea that I'm actually really excited about, and I'm having to control myself to finish Wizard's Apprentice. Myself and the creator of the Tales from the Lake of Sorrows series, PJ156, we collaborated a little bit. I don't know if you guys remember a while back during the summer there was going to be a new community module that we were trying to get together. Chaos Wielder was kind of heading it up, and a bunch of modders were trying to do it, and nothing has really come of it yet, maybe in the future, but we put together something for that, and I thought we worked together well, so we're thinking of putting together some sort of like a base module with a short release, maybe like a short module, and then try to add on like mini episode modules. What we're noticing, and we've talked about this with other modders on the forums, is that, you know, it takes such an amazingly long time to put stuff out that, you know, you might start and then like 2 or 3 years later, God knows who's even going to be playing the game. So we're trying to shorten the development time and team up to kind of be able to deliver a reasonable amount of content in a reasonable amount of time. So we're going to try something like an installation type module where every once in a while we update it with new content. It would be like a single player persistent world of sorts.
No, that's cool. It's nice to see people actually working together in the community.
Yeah, that's hard to do. It's got to be special. It's funny. I played Sheep in Stone, and you can kind of learn a lot about somebody just by playing their game. And just after playing it, I was like, this seems like a cool person. I'd like to meet him. And, you know, we've got along pretty well, providing moral support for each other and in the grueling process of modding. The thing about it that really has me interested is I'm looking at kind of putting together a system where you get, it's going to be based kind of partially on the ocean, like ships, and you get a ship, and over time you build it up. So it's kind of like a combination between a role-playing game and then a resource building up your forces game, almost similar like the way they do having a stronghold. You know, you have to get the stronghold and build up the forces and stuff like that. I want to do something kind of similar with ships, and you can go around and on the overland map you fight with other ships and things like that. Definitely presents some challenges, such as we only have one ship creature model for the whole thing, and I think a creature model would be necessary as opposed to just a visual effect, because you're going to have to make it do other stuff. But I'm not sure about that. But that's the idea. I've been thinking about it, tossing around in my head. We'll see if it even comes to anything. We'll see how much I have left in me after making Wizard's Apprentice 3. I'm getting tempted to make it very expansive and big. We'll see if that pans out, though.
No, I hope it works out for you.
Oh God, yeah, me too. I've been playing Path of Evil ever since release, and I'm on the overland map, and it's really cool being back on an overland map. I think Camel does a really good job of making you feel like you're in a really big place. Even better, I would say, than Storm of Zaheer and the OC. I think that he really captures the size of the continent, and that's something I would like to try to do as well in my own way.
Yeah, you mentioned there about, you know, how many people are going to be playing the game 2 or 3 years from now by the time you finish and stuff. Where do you see the Neverwinter Nights 2 community going in the future?
I think that most people are just going to stop playing other modules and focus on my series. I think it's going to be great for the community. I'm just kidding, guys. That's a joke. Okay, good.
I thought it was good.
Yeah, it was great.
I feel strong to very strong. I think, you know, there's no other games out there like Neverwinter Nights and Neverwinter Nights 2, in my opinion, that you can really mod to this extent. I mean, you can build stuff from the ground up if you want to, and there's nothing out there like that.
You're absolutely right. There isn't. This is It appears to be like a dying breed. Everybody wants everything to just be online anymore. It really takes a lot of control and a lot of the stuff away from the players and content developers alike.
It changes the gaming experience because, and I know you guys have seen this. If you go and play an officially, commercial game, it has a completely different flavor than what people are willing to do in their own work. You know, like in Wizards Apprentice 1, I get really silly. There's a lot of ridiculous stuff that happens, and if you're trying to market something, you probably can't get with making potty humor with kobolds and orcs and stuff like that. That's just not going to fly. But, you can do whatever, and people are going to do whatever when you have, it doesn't matter. When money stops being an object, people just go out there and have fun with it. It's great.
It is. And it's going to be a shame to see it go where it appears to be going. It's just, it seems like everything wants to be a cookie cutter MMO anymore.
People are, a while back I was doodling on the internet and, I was looking at the Adventures Unlimited, for the old Gold Box type games.
Oh, hell yeah, that was great.
People are still posting stuff for that. Like, as of, I know I checked it out maybe 6 or 8 months ago, and there were still new posts. And, a few people are still playing that stuff. So, the Neverwinter Nights is probably, it's unlikely it'll ever have the huge fan base. We probably won't see downloads into the tens or hundreds of thousands like in the past, but I think a cult following of thoughtful and interested players, I think as long as there's people like us putting good material out, there's still gonna be people out there playing it, and I think it'll be fun.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, that and the fact that they're finally doing the one thing that I thought was a pretty big death knell was they quit selling it in the stores about 2 years ago, year and a half, 2 years ago. And that was a big problem. I mean, because you can go and get freaking Diablo 1 in the store still. And that's been, a good 15 years almost, maybe longer since that was released. You also got to look at the fact now that they re-released it and that Neverwinter Complete, where you can get all of 1 and all of 2 in all its glory.
I went out and got that.
Yeah, same here. I bought another copy myself. I see it in the store, and I purchased a second copy myself because I like, if I want to have a PC that I'm logged in as a regular PC on and have the other ones DM or, whatever, I can do that now without having to worry about cheesing up the CD key or something. So definitely, that was a big thing. And I think that we're starting to see some, we've seen a large shift even on our persistent world in the last, 2 weeks or so since they've released, 2-3 weeks since they've been getting in the stores. I mean, we had 44 new players in the last 30 days already. So that's a lot for, picking up new players. And that's
really good. I've also noticed a few comments from some unfamiliar names on the vaults and on the boards. So that's good, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess eventually the game will become old enough to where it's just one of those, it kind of turns into shareware, apparently. I mean, Pool of Radiance, the Gold Box, all the Gold Box games, you can just download for free. So I guess eventually that'll happen.
Yeah, eventually. I mean, right now I think they can still make money off it for years to come. It pretty much is free if you think about all you're getting for $30.
Well, that's true. You're getting thousands and thousands of games for $30. Definitely.
Yeah, it's a ridiculously good deal. I mean, no matter how you look at it. That's not even taking into account the Steam version, which is way cheaper even. So,
yeah, and fully patched. Oh, God, that's nice.
Yes, and fully patched. So, well, closing out, I just want to say thanks for coming on the show again. It was a great interview, and you had a lot of great stuff with your modules, and I hope to keep seeing your modules keep cranking out of there so we could have other more interviews like these, plus have a lot of stuff to laugh at and talk to you about. And, do you have anything else that we didn't cover before, or do you like to tell the audience about your stuff, or anything that last thought?
No, not really. I think all the bases are covered on in the vault and on the Neverwinter Nexus. You can get in there and look at all the important part. I'd just like to say thanks to the people who run the vault, the people who run the Nexus, and our moderators on the board. Appreciate everything they do for the community, and what you guys do. I really appreciate that, keeping things going, keeping it real.
Excellent. Thanks for coming on, and I'm going to give you the closing line.
Oh, fantastic. Get in game and level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity, who are solely responsible for its contents.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is copyright 2012.